he was too proud to go to a homeless shelter. He had a bag of all of his nice clothes, nice leather shoes, and snow regularly landed on him in the morning. He'd wake up and everything would be frozen, his nose, his toes, his fingers, as it would come through this shattered window and sunroof of this vehicle that he lived in for 14 months. And he'd go to soup kitchens, he'd dumpster dive for food, but he met people on the street. He told me he tried three or four times to die by suicide. He went to emergency rooms. He was turned away, he believes, because he was homeless. And he said, "And I'm a white guy, and I couldn't get the service I needed because I was homeless." And I hadn't heard that element before, you know, in terms of the stories we cover. So he jumped off a bridge in Winnipeg, and he survived. He tried a number of ways, and he is still alive. And because of that, he realized that he had a purpose, a bigger purpose. And so he fundraised for a plaque, and it's a small plaque on the wall there. It says Hope Alley. He, in his own words, harassed the city councillor for money to put in flower boxes and wooden benches. In my times downtown interviewing people, they're always sitting there because a little ray of sunshine seems to always just hit square there, even though the other buildings block it out. And so they have this annual ceremony where they read out the names of everyone who's died in that year, who were on the street, and it was extremely moving.
I've been doing this for 5 years. The yearly memorial to remember all our relatives who've passed.
Wanda Stevens. Carmen Peachy. Dave Brown, and to everyone else that we missed.
So, Brandy, we couldn't leave this conversation without talking about the fact that that happened and you were arrested. So you were inside the tent. The police came to move in. Yellow tape was put up and you were inside the zone. You were filming on your cell phone. And when the police officers came up, told you to leave, you identified yourself as a reporter, stated that you had a right to be there. It looked like they were shoving you and then ultimately they arrested you. I need to say before we go on that I do sit on the board of Canadian Journalists for Free Expression and the Canadian Association of Journalists. And so I'm on one hand an advocate for press freedom, so I'm not entirely neutral in this situation. But I had to ask you for an update on where your case is at and what's happening with you.
My lawyer is going to show up and set a court date for a couple of weeks after I was fingerprinted and had my mugshot taken. I'm praying for the charges to be dropped. It's been pretty stressful because I've been inhibited from being able to really follow this story as I normally would because I've been dealing and distracted, right, with facing criminal charges. And so I'm trying not to think too far ahead because I'll just be a little bit overwhelmed to think about the possibility of being, you know, having a criminal record. So just taking it step by step.
That is your Canada Land podcast. You can email me at jesse@canadaland.com. I read them all. Our website is canadaland.com. You can sign up for our newsletter there. This episode was brought to you by our editor-in-chief, Karen Pugliese. Our senior producer is Bruce Thorson. Additional production and editing from Tristan Capicchione. Our managing editor is Annette Ejofor. I'm your host, Jesse Brown. Our theme music is by So-Called. Syndication is handled by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca.
Hi,
Hi there. You just heard Canada Land, the show where I'm typically joined by a different guest each week for a long feature interview. What you're going to hear next is Canada Land Shortcuts, a topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it. Matea Roach, host of our own Backbench podcast. Welcome to the 450th episode of Shortcuts.
I feel like I should win a prize for being a landmark number.
Oh, you want a prize every time you go on a show. It's really nice to have you. We haven't been on a podcast together before.
That's true. Yeah, I've been on Shortcuts, but always when you're away or busy or doing something else.
Try not to take it personally. I'm glad you're here now. Listen, today on the show, the radicalized shooter who stormed City Hall in the name of... Well, we're not going to tell you. No, we might. Welcome to Shortcuts, where we talk shit about the news. Matea, in Canada, thank God, we have not had many awful incidents where, like, a shooter runs into a government building. Everyone's mind is probably turning to the one that comes to mind, which in 2014, when Parliament was stormed by a shooter who did kill someone. And that was, of course, national news, and we wanted to know everything we possibly could about that. But it happened again last week. And this time it did not get a lot of attention. This was last Tuesday in Edmonton. According to Edmonton Police Service, a shooter parked his vehicle in the City Hall parkade at 10:18 a.m., entered the building from the parkade. Once inside City Hall, he lit several handheld incendiary devices, believed to be Molotov cocktails, that caused a small fire outside an elevator. He then fired several rounds from a long gun into the ceiling, walls, and windows. The male then dropped the firearm on the floor and surrendered to a City Hall security commissioner. There was an unarmed security guard who confronted this guy, and thank God nobody was hurt. Then over the course of hours, reportedly, there was like a grade one class that was evacuated. The mayor was evacuated. This guy stormed City Hall and shot off his gun and shot off these explosives. Here's how this was covered on the National, on the CBC's flagship newscast.
In a wide-ranging, sometimes sporadic, four-minute video posted by the social media account YEG Wave circulating online, Sarvar details a long list of grievances with society, saying he wants to make the world better. It is not clear where or when the video was recorded.
Huh. We don't hear the video from the CBC, nor do we know what these grievances with society are. That's consistent with the CBC's article, where they say that they confirmed that the guy, they went to the trouble of confirming like that this video was Sarvar. They confirmed with people who know him. And they say he describes wide-ranging thoughts about modern society while referencing a mission. What these wide-ranging thoughts are, CBC does not tell us. Other media did tell us what was said in the video. And he lists quite a few reasons. Global News, Post-Media newspapers. Globe and Mail initially did not get into details, but then eventually they did an update story where they did. And, of course, you could just go find this video online. So it's a four-minute video. There seems to be internal cuts, and I don't know if he edited the video or if somebody else did, but it was posted by YEG Wave in Edmonton. And let's listen to some of this video.
Assalamu alaikum, brothers and sisters. Before I do my mission, I want you all to know that I am not a psychopath. I do not believe in bloodshed. I am not one of these monsters that hurt children, that hurt innocents, and that promote wars or destabilization of our society. I'm just tired of seeing the tyranny and corruption taking over our society and our lives. Good, honest, and God-fearing men and women must be our doctors, law enforcement, diplomats, politicians, and teachers that rise up against this wokeism disease that's leading our generation into deception. We need to rise up against this inflation, housing crisis, the unrest that's happening between us because of multiculturalism due to religion, race, and all that stuff. This needs to come to an end with one another. leaders, officials, and anybody that has hands into this corruption, into this genocide that's going on in Gaza and throughout the world, anybody that is destabilizing other countries, hurting their community, should feel ashamed of themselves. And inshallah, we will rise against you guys and we'll put you on trial. As immigrants, we must understand that we are part of this agenda. We're not here for no reason. This is a man-made war. This is a man-made immigration crisis that we're all here. But instead of hate and anger in our hearts, we must spread love, respect one another, show honesty with one another, and promote pro-life and work with one another to build our economy, our country. We all need to rise up. We all need to stop being on our phones. We gotta promote a healthy social life where we all communicate with one another, see each other. We need to start filtering our water. We need to watch what we're eating. We gotta start eating healthy. Our officials need to start promoting healthy choices, healthy diet, exercises. They need to unite us all as one, and we all gotta start doing something positive for our society. Look what's happening. We all know what's going on, and we cannot turn a blind eye. I'm not turning a blind eye. Assalamu alaikum, brothers and sisters. Inshallah, I'll succeed with my mission. If I don't succeed, I know somebody else will succeed for me. Assalamu alaikum.
So that's how he described what he described as his mission and what he was rising up against. And that's the information that I think CBC decided, they made a decision not to share with the public, whereas other news organizations did. Why do you think they would have withheld that?
So I find it a bizarre choice to withhold the content of it. I think it's like normal and fine that they didn't play a clip of the video. I think that as best as I can guess, I think that in a lot of news organizations, especially like in the past 5 years, I would say there's been this turn towards not wanting to amplify the messages of people who do these sort of lone wolf like terror attacks or attempted terror attacks. I assume that that is the logic undergirding their decision to not really broadcast even the message of this video. I don't agree with the decision to be so vague about it, though, because like, what was their description again? Yeah, a wide-ranging, you know, wide-ranging thoughts about modern society. I have wide-ranging thoughts about modern society. Like, that could mean literally anything.
Yeah. We asked CBC, why did you withhold this? And we haven't heard back from them yet. I think that you're probably right that it has something to do with, like, that, you know, we're having these conversations in journalism about, like, we don't want to amplify messages and we don't want to... Here's what was said to me, because I asked this, you know, online, like, why would they hold this back? And people said, well, it would be irresponsible. Other journalists said to me, it would be irresponsible for journalists to share this information. This is what the mayor of Edmonton, Amarjit Sohi, tweeted. Yesterday's incident was shocking for those involved. I recognize that there is information circulating online being attributed to the alleged subject. Given that this is an active police investigation, I would like to ask everyone to allow time for the Edmonton Police Service to consider, assess, and evaluate all information as part of their total investigative efforts. It is wrong and dangerous to assume the actions of a single individual speak for any larger group. Racism and Islamophobia are already significant issues, and we cannot let the actions of one individual impact how we treat or perceive an entire community. I don't think it's a huge leap to think that this was also in CBC's mind of like, let's not mention that this guy explicitly says that he's doing this in the name of Allah, inshallah, we'll rise up. Let's not mention that he twice references Gaza as his motivation for doing this because we don't want to bring racism and any kind of negative consequences to Canada's Muslim community, which is like a very important thing to be conscious of. And this is what people, other journalists said to me, is like, it would be irresponsible. This guy's obviously not okay in the head and he lists a lot of things, you know. That's why it's irresponsible journalism to share the full message. Or even, I think you're right, you don't have to necessarily play the clip if you're worried about, you know, there are some manifestos that I think could inspire copycats. That was not the most fiery or compelling manifesto. So, I who knows? But, you know, I could see the newsroom decision to be like, well, let's not play the actual thing. That's fine. But to not even tell Canadians why this guy did it seems bizarre to me.
Well, and I think, like, to your point, right, it's like, okay, we don't want to mention, or it would be irresponsible to mention, because I think that what does happen oftentimes is like there has been in right-wing media especially and on the right more broadly of just like shit that I see on Twitter. There is such like an immediate distrust, just generally speaking, of any Muslim like using language that indicates their faith because it is associated with like this sort of, you know, it's associated with terrorism. It's associated with, like, violence, which is wrong, right? And so I can see that the CBC maybe is like, well, let's not mention that so that we don't give people the wrong idea about it. The problem, though, is, like, yes, that's a substantial part of the video, but he also equally, like, he talks about inflation, like, as much as he talks about Gaza in this video. He talks about, like, we should be filtering our water and, like, not going on our phones. And I think, to me, it makes the most sense to give all of that context. Mm-hmm. And then that way, I think it's clear, you know, people are still talking about this video. This is the thing, right? Like, the people that are going to use this to paint Canadian Muslims with a broad brush, I think, have already done that. And I think that the responsibility of journalists is to offer context, right? I agree that this isn't, like, the most compelling manifesto, let's call it. I do think that in general, because there have been instances of, like, Elliot Rodger in 2014, who wrote this, like, long incel manifesto, like, pages and pages, and also posted a video. Those documents have since become adopted by incels online.
Manassian
sort of,
referenced Rodgers when he, with the van attack.
Yeah, with the van attack, exactly, right? You actually do have instances of copycats. Same with, like, the Christchurch mosque shooter in 2019, like, wrote, I think it was dozens of pages, you know, in this manifesto, and I think with the hope that he would inspire copycats. And so this guy at the end of his video is saying, you know, if I don't succeed in my mission, like, hopefully someone else will, even though it's not the most inspiring rhetorically, obviously that is his aim, right? And so I think to not...
And we might not be his target audience. Maybe somebody else feels...
Yeah, someone's like, oh, he's spitting fire. You know, it was one of those videos where every so often he would say something where I'd be like, yeah, inflation is bad, but don't go shoot up Edmonton City Hall about it.
You know, he says, like, a lot of stuff, and some of it is like, you know, he says something against racism, you know? But a lot of the stuff is consistent, and I think that we do need to know this stuff to understand what is creating little brain worms that make people do extreme and terrible things. And it is a instructive window into how the public atmosphere and the dialogue is really affecting people personally and on edge cases inspiring this. Because, like, some of what he says is consistent, like hating wokeness, multiculturalism is driving us apart. He references, we immigrants are not here for no reason. This is a man-made war. That strikes me as a pretty clear reference to a very popular conspiracy theory that Jews are engineering mass migration of Muslims in order to force a race war. I'm not the only person who is alarmed by some of the connections that he was drawing. B'nai B'rith Canada released a statement saying they're deeply troubled after learning about the terrible events that are unfolding in Edmonton. Here's the quote. We fear that the perpetrators' reference to the Israel-Hamas conflict in their manifesto will only lead to the further incitement against Canadian Jews in the midst of an unprecedented surge in anti-Semitic incidents. So the fact of the matter is that the outrage over events in Israel, Palestine, are inspiring violence. In addition to all kinds of legitimate protests, there have been acts of extremism and violence. And, you know, some communities are much more affected by those than others. And I think that when you are talking about responsibility in journalism, the basic responsibility to tell people what is happening in their cities, for people in Edmonton to know why this happened, for people across Canada to know, this is another incident in which one of the reasons given was this very disgusted and outraged, passionate feeling is one of the reasons why this guy took some people are identifying as a rifle, and I guess created like Molotov cocktails and went into City Hall and exploded a device and shot off his gun. And this could have been so much worse. If your idea of responsibility in journalism is about obscuring that information from the public, that's being responsible. I would say that we have a more primary responsibility to inform the public.
Well, and I think that So I have somewhat of a, I guess, like, everyone brings their own shit to looking at a video like this. I interpreted sort of some of his remarks about this is a man-made crisis to refer to, I think it's a common, I would say, well, I don't even want to say right-wing talking point. I think it's being embraced across the spectrum now. Just the notion of, like, the housing crisis and inflation and a lot of these things are sort of government-created crises that are in part being caused by mass immigration, and that it's like there's a liberal plot to essentially bring in immigrants to maintain like political control in Canada. Like that's what it evokes for me. I don't think that that means that your interpretation of it and the B'nai B'rith interpretation of it is necessarily wrong. I just think there's like multiple ways to read the video. And because it is sort of like, again, not the most coherently articulated, I guess we need to be able to talk about it to sort of make these connections and figure out what is being meant.
It's sort of like whatever the conspiracy soup is that's out there, you can go wild trying to like figure out or make sense of it because it doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. But people do put all these things, you know, we needed to know that the guy who went to the Pizzagate shooter, mm-hmm. we needed to know that this ridiculous Pizzagate conspiracy theory is what inspired him to go to Cosmic Ping Pong and fire off his gun. Mm-hmm. We didn't need to know the contents of his lunatic mm-hmm. manifesto, mm-hmm. but we do need to know, like, this is what's in the air that's causing people to lose it.
Well, and I think that when you are in an atmosphere where conspiracies are rife, and then you have, I think it's especially bad for the CBC to be the actor that is withholding information, given that already there is this notion that, you know, there's censorship. It's like, you know, the woke CBC is not telling us the real news. This, I think, is implying that there is information that is too dangerous for people to know, which in an environment where people are already latching on to conspiracies and already latching on to the notion that there are things that are not able to be openly discussed, I think that to then actually have that as a policy that's being implemented by the CBC just like gives credence to that method of thinking about things. So again, I really do disagree with like the sharing of substantial clips of the video. And I think that circulating it, you know, however inarticulate it may be, is like not the best thing. But yeah, I think the Pizzagate analogy makes perfect sense, right? Because I think that if you were to report on that story in particular and not say, well, this is like, what was the framework that the person was thinking of when they went and did this? I think you sort of do almost lend credence to the idea of like, maybe there was something there that they were acting on.
Yeah, I think you raise a really good point. I mean, I've seen that kind of conspiracy thinking online and people saying like, oh, look, the woke multicultural mayor of Edmonton is telling the woke multicultural Trudeau journalists of the CBC to suppress this information and they dutifully blah, 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 blah. It lends fuel to another conspiracy theory, which, you know, whatever, conspiracy theorists are going to theorize, but like don't help them. And, you know, trust in journalists is at an all-time low. Like I think it's irresponsible not to tell people what the heck's happening when that's your job.
Yeah, I think for me it's like it... Journalism ideally should be telling you what is happening and not telling you what to think about what is happening. And I think choosing deliberately to withhold certain information is a form of telling you what to think about what's happening.
Mateo, you have done this show many times when that other guy hosts it. You know that we duly note things. What can you duly note for our listeners today?
So I always have, this is a strange sentence to say, but I always have Iran on the brain. I feel like I'm thinking about Iran a lot. Have you heard, I know you've heard of this, that Iran allegedly hired Canadian Hell's Angels to conduct political assassinations in the U.S.?
That's what you call a scoop in this business. That's like, what?
It's like such a Mad Libs headline of it has everything you could possibly want. But yeah, so reporting from within the past week, I guess, basically has said that two Canadians planned to conduct assassinations in the U.S. on behalf of Iran's intelligence service, targeting, I guess, an Iranian dissident and somebody that had left Iran with him. So one was a political defector. So these charges were unsealed on Monday by the U.S. Department of Justice. Apparently, I guess, these Hell's Angels were charging like $350,000 US for the job of assassinating this guy, which they did not do. So I have a lot of thoughts, I guess. What are your thoughts about this?
I guess one thought is, you know, I called it a scoop, but actually it's not like a digging from journalists. This came out of the American justice system that we know about this. And one thought I had was that like, wow, we sure do learn a lot more about like Canadian assassins for foreign states when the news somehow is unearthed from America than from our own journalists. That was one thought I had.
They also seem better at stopping political assassinations in America.
Yeah, they're better at that. And the other thought I had is Iran on the brain. Like Iran is heating up, or like all eyes on Iran.
Yeah. One thing that I've seen a lot of lately, both in relation to just like generally the sort of expanding conflict in the Middle East, because it really isn't just Gaza. It's also, you know, it's Lebanon, it's Yemen, it's all of these things. There's been increasing calls from Conservative members of parliament in Canada to list the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps as a terrorist organization, which is like a discussion that's been going on for quite a while. Republicans in the U.S., I think Senator John Cornyn was like tweeting about how we should go to war with Iran. Just like,
it's not a good idea.
It's a very, it's a bad idea. The IRGC, I also just really disagree with the premise of listing a conscription-based army as a terrorist group, which is, I think, why Canada has not listed the whole IRGC as a terrorist group to date. Like, there's certain high-level officials that are listed as, you know, recognized terrorists. I believe the Quds group, but yeah, listing a whole conscription-based army as a terrorist group seems not like a rational response to me to deal with this increased Iranian interference.
I'm just fascinated by this, like, Hell's Angels Iran government connection.
Well, yeah, I want to know, like, everything about how that happened. But yeah, Iran on the brain, Jesse. I always have Iran on the brain.
Duly noted. I gotta duly note this, even though it's not a story that's getting, you know, too little attention. It's getting deserved attention, and that is that this ongoing reckoning in hockey has worked its way up to the NHL. These names will mean more to sports fans and our listenership than to me, but Michael McLeod, Dylan Dubé, Carter Hart, Cal Foote, and Alex Formanton all have been charged for this alleged sexual assault, an alleged group incident in 2018 that we've been hearing about for a long time. I think there have been, like, whispers and rumors, and a lot of people have known these names for some time, and who's it going to be in the NHL, and now we know who is being charged with this. We'll find out what happens in the court proceedings with this as we go along. But I wanted to duly note it because one of my colleagues pointed out that very quickly another revelation came from the world of hockey that might seem on the surface unrelated. Sault Ste. Marie, the Sioux Greyhounds, removed a banner from their arena honoring their former coach, John Vansbybrook, who resigned from the Greyhounds in 2003 after he admitted making a racist slur. So what does this historical racist slur and this guy who's been celebrated for like two decades ever since have to do with this alleged sexual assault? I think that it is just evidence that perhaps a lot of stuff that people have been tolerating or sweeping under the rug or ignoring in hockey, that breaking point where, like, yeah, we're not looking to tolerate this anymore. And if that is true, a lot of stuff is going to come out. Laura Robinson, journalist, has been covering this. She wrote a book on abuse in hockey in 1998. I think that was a very difficult time to be talking about sexual assault in hockey. And she faced a lot of resistance for that. And she's been, you know, sadly vindicated again and again and again. I wonder if this is not just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, I am not a real hockey head, I will say. Two things that this brings to mind. One is that it was very interesting that a couple of days, I think before these players were named, at least one of their teams, I think it was the Calgary Flames, posted a graphic on social media saying, you know, such and such player is taking leave for mental health. Like, there was sort of this vague allusions to players being released from their teams, not because of this, which is like, it's just stupid. Like, if you know this, presumably you knew this news was going to come out.
Yeah.
You know something's up.
So the NHL teams, they say that they didn't know. They didn't know. And, you know, you have to wonder with that plausible deniability stuff, was this a situation where they kind of knew, but they were careful to not know in any kind of, like, demonstrable paper trail kind of way? Or do they really not know? You know, you raise an eyebrow at that one.
The other thing I'll say is, like, you know, people that I know that are parents, which is not, I'm still in my 20s. I don't know that many parents, but, like, my cousins and, like, their cohort of people that are in their 30s and have kids, no one wants to enroll their kids in hockey. I think it's a combination of, like, the culture around it is just seen as noxious and unpleasant. But from the professional level, like, right down to the parents are unpleasant. Why do you have to get up for practice at 5 a.m. when every other sport is, like, in the evening at a reasonable hour?
The gear is expensive and heavy. And
it's
gets
expensive.
Smelly.
You have to drive, like, far to go do it. Like, it seems as though the cachet and the stranglehold that hockey has had on Canadian culture has weakened quite substantially over the past, I don't know, since the Vancouver Olympics seems to be the timeline.
Could be. I'm the wrong guy to ask, and I'd be curious from a small-town perspective if that's true, but perhaps.
Yeah, this could be my, you know, Toronto brain poisoning from 8.5 years of living here, thinking that hockey doesn't matter.
One way or the other, it's good that this stuff's coming out, so.
Duly noted.
That is Shortcuts. Matea, this was so much fun. Thank you.
Let me on again sometime when you're working.
Let's do it. I can be emailed about this or anything else at jesse@canadaland.com, and I read everything you send. Matea Roach, where can people find you?
You can find me on The Backbench. We release episodes every 2 weeks. We released one that I'm quite proud of this week about the recent ICJ proceedings between South Africa and Israel. You can also find me on Twitter at Matea Roach, and you can email me at matea@candleland.com. I read most things you send me.
This episode is produced by Aviva Lasarad with additional production by Caleb Thompson. Our managing editor is Annette Ajofor, and our editor-in-chief is Karen Pugliese. Our theme music is by So-Called. Syndications by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca.